The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
I got one thing to read before we bring on our guest here. I got two cats at home. You know, I like to take care of them. So Pets Life, a company that we've been partnered with, is a Minnesota pet care company that has created an oral care product for your cat or dog that is 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve, your pet's oral health. Save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. That's PetsLife.com. Enter the promo code OMAHA, as in the second part of Cold Omaha, and save 20% on every online order. Or mention OMAHA for 20% off any phone order. That's PetsLife.com, spelled with a Z. PetsLife.com. Back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find us not only on coldomaha.com, but on iTunes. Check us out. Look for Midwest Swing on iTunes. In fact, if you Google Midwest Swing iTunes, we actually come up as a result before the song by the St. Lunatics, which inspired the name of this. Anyway, you can find Cold Omaha on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. I'm joined, as always, by the producer of this business, Tom Schreier. Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. You can find Tom on Twitter at tschreier3. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct.
And we've got a very fun guest today calling in from Western Wisconsin. We've got Twins Daily's Jeremy Nygaard. Jeremy, how's it going today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good, good. Jeremy, you can be found on Twitter at Jeremy Nygaard, all one combined word, basically your name, so people can find you on Twitter and see what you got going on there. But basically speaking on Twins Daily, my understanding is that you are kind of like the contracts rules kind of guru as far as knowing, you know, when a player, you know, might exhaust their minor league eligibility or options or that kind of thing. You kind of handle the contract side of things, but also a lot on the minor league side. Is there anything I missed there?
I do those things, and I'm kind of big into the draft too. That's kind of my—
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's kind of my thing now, but yeah, I'm really into the rules and how things kind of get put together and how things formulate. I don't know, it's kind of my nerdy side.
So you, last night on Twitter, we're writing the minor league reports for Twins Daily, an invaluable resource for anybody who's trying to keep up with the baby twins. What goes into that? Well, you know, what? How often do you do those, and what kind of goes into putting those together at night?
I do every Monday night. There's a handful of us that help out with that. Seth takes the majority of them, but I'm the guy that does Monday, and you know, we can switch around a little bit, but you know, a lot of that is— and I have the MILB TV package, so
yeah, I got that too. It's pretty awesome.
Some of those games, yeah, it's pretty sweet when it works.
that's accurate too.
Yeah, so I'll watch some of those games as time allows, and follow the game logs as they update, and you know, just try to get an idea of what guys are doing, where guys are headed. You know, there's always guys that kind of pop up, which is neat when— and, you know, I try to look at the box score throughout the week, and life doesn't allow that as much as it used to anymore. But just seeing guys when they're rookie league guys and kind of following through the systems is an exciting thing. And it gives us kind of a backbone to form our prospect handbook then in the winter, which Seth and I and Cody do. But you know, there's so much that happens in the baseball world that people don't ever seem to notice, and that's kind of what we try to help, you know, bring out. So when a guy gets promoted, that's a big deal, you know, to them and their family, but we try to make it a big deal to all the Twins fans.
It's a pretty good year for the affiliates. I'm looking at the page right now. Every single team in the Twins system is at or above 500. What have you seen so far this year writing the reports and just kind of keeping an eye on it as far as the health of the future Twins so far?
You know, it's interesting because Cedar Rapids, I was down there a couple weeks ago, and they don't have a lot of prospects. You know, I was talking to— I don't remember who I was talking to. Maybe It might have been Seth. Might have been a brother of mine. But like, you can watch a low A baseball game and say, yeah, I think that guy's got a shot. You know, for example, there's a year when Sano and Vargas, Polanco, all those guys were down there. And you would say, I think those guys have a 50% chance or greater of making the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, you know, there wasn't anybody that really sticks out as guys that probably have a greater chance to make it than not make it. But yet that team continues to win. And they're not doing it with a really super old roster. I mean, they have some guys that were drafted this year, a lot of guys that were drafted last year. And they're getting, you know, production from guys that really non-prospects. Luis Arraez, their second baseman, really a guy that when we wrote him up in the prospect handbook, I think I said, you know, short season guy, maybe plays at E-Town. He's batting 343 or around there at 19. And so guys like that, that kind of pop up, they're fun to watch. Double A, there's more prospects that I think you'd look at and say, those guys, there's guys that have a chance. A lot of pitchers. You know, Nick Birdie's health has been a kind of a downer. Right. He's a guy that you thought could help, you know, soon. But I think there's plenty of guys that can be the next wave. In fact, I wrote an article last Wednesday, and you can find it on Twins Daily, probably on the second or third page, called The Next Wave of Guys That Are at Double A or Higher that could help this Twins team out in the next year and a half, including a number of rotation guys in Chattanooga with Gonsalves and Jorge and Stewart, Tyler J when he's healthy. There's going to be guys that are knocking on the door, and if guys that are up aren't getting it done, I mean, you could see some of this turnover. Just, you know, there's 40-man spots open, and typically the Twins play pretty close to 39 or 40 guys on that roster. I think right now they might only be at 36 or 37. So there's an opportunity for some guys late in this year, even still this year, to come up and make a contribution.
Yeah, I agree with that. They are Cedar Rapids at 540 for a winning percentage, second in the organization behind the Rochester Red Wings. So you got low A and triple A, obviously pretty different poles as far as the minor leagues are concerned, but a couple of teams that are playing quite well. What would you say is your favorite roster right now among the affiliates?
Probably Chattanooga, just because of their pitchers.
Right.
I love that rotation. I think those guys all got a shot. I think Gonsalves has a chance to be, you know, a mid-rotation guy.
Is that a lot of the Fort Myers graduates from the beginning of the year, or has it kind of evolved a little bit differently than that?
The pitching staff is Zach Granite. I like him in the outfield as a potential fourth outfielder. I kind of slept on him. I was talking to a scout that had seen him, and Granite was hurt and just wasn't, you know, progressing very rapidly. And a scout told me at the end of last year,
Billy Burns. Heard that one too.
And he said, that's him. That's who he's going to be. And I'm like, you're nuts. He's like, nope, that's who he is. That's who he's going to be. I'm like, if he's a major leaguer at all, that's a win. And he's been really good this year. I think, you know, he's got a shot. Center field looks like, you know, it's crowded. Whether Buxton produces or not, Rosario could be there. Kepler could play there.
Sure.
Santana could be there,
mm-hmm.
And doesn't profile as a corner guy, but at worst he profiles as a fourth outfielder that can pinch run and steal some bases. You know, I like him. Vielma is someone that projects as a guy that has a shot. You know, he's going to be added to the 40 man, and whether he can compete for that starting shortstop spot, you know, I think depends a lot on how he continues to hit, how Polanco plays, you know, what the Twins do with Escobar. And then Gordon's breathing down his neck. So, you know, there's depth there, not like high end depth, but there's depth. And then Mitch Garver, I think, you know, he's a guy that for me, if I was running the show, I would have moved Suzuki, whether there was a lot of interest in him or not. I would have given him away, and not brought Murphy up, but brought Garver up to see what Garver can do. Cause you need to know what's happening at catcher, and Suzuki's not the answer. You know, people are like, well, we can resign him, but I can't put a guy behind the dish that can't throw to runner at second base.
Is Garver a 40-man need to add at the end of the season?
Yeah, both him and Turner would be potential adds. I think Garver's, you know, from my perspective, Garver's passed Turner up as a prospect.
For sure.
Turner, Turner could be a backup, but he needed to be a backup to someone that could play, that could catch 4 or 5 days a week. And who is that guy? Is that Mitch Garver? We don't know that yet. He doesn't even catch 4 or 5 days a week at Double A, plays the first base. Is Murphy that guy? You know, I don't know about that either. Is Centeno that guy? I don't think so. So, you know, I think giving Garver a look could help form some plans for the winter. I don't know that the Twins are going to go nuts and try to sign Wilson Ramos. And I don't know what other options there are out there, to be honest. But
Weeders, maybe. That's about it.
So I'd want to get a look. And you know, the Twins have been known to take guys in the minor leagues and try to move them to catcher and see how if they stick.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's something that they consider with some of their guys at lower levels. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But they don't have a solution. And I think during the draft, you know, a lot of people ask me questions about it. Are they going to draft the next catcher? Are they going to draft the next catcher? Well, 7 years away, you know, Ben Rortvedt is it 5 promotions or 6 promotions from the major league?
Yeah.
So that's not going to help until 2020 at best. He's batting like 190 or something in the GCL. So there's a lot of question marks. I think that at that position, there's a lot of guys that are serviceable, you know, Juan Centenos, but there's not an all-star. And Kurt Suzuki, yeah, I get it. He was an all-star once, but there's just not an answer. So I think as excited as you can get looking at the depth that they have in the minor leagues, there's not that answer. And you know, is that a super huge deal when guys pop up and you maybe make a trade? I was big on Cervelli a couple years ago.
Yeah, if he hadn't signed that deal with the Pirates, that would have been nice.
Well, even when he was a backup for the Pirates, mm-hmm. it's like everything I looked at suggested him. Maybe this guy could be a starting catcher. And when, I don't know if it was Willingham or Morneau, I think it might have been one of those two, and the Pirates were in it. It was the Yankees. It was Willingham to the Yankees, I think. Because I'm like, well, maybe that could be a deal that the Twins could work out and just see if the Cervelli guy could be a full-time catcher. And it turned out that he could. And I've archived the tweets, and I could prove that I was a believer. But
they picked the wrong Yankees backup then.
They certainly did.
So a couple options. Mike Berardino, you obviously are aware of him, said Cameron Rupp, who has turned into a nice offensive catcher for the Phillies, and they've got Jorge Alfaro, and then another guy whose name escapes me right now. And then also Jason Castro of the Astros is going to be a free agent. I think he's a pretty good framer. He's been good at times. You know, you're in a situation where the Twins might have to buy low on somebody. Maybe those are a couple names they look at. Are you adding Stuart Turner, though, to the 40-man roster in the offseason if you're in charge?
No. No. I wouldn't do it just because at this point, I don't know how many catchers even stick Rule 5. I think Nieto stuck.
Adrian Nieto, right?
Yeah, there was another guy I feel like stuck for a while, but it's hard to give, you know, you can kind of look at the trends of guys that can stick, and he might fit that trend just because if you have a really, really good offensive catcher that can go two ways and you just need a backup guy, like he would be a great pick by the Royals if the Royals needed a backup catcher. You know, Perez is going to catch all the games anyway, so
right.
If he, you know, if you need a guy for once a week and you believe in the bat, then yeah, maybe. But I don't see how Stuart Turner would stick on a big league roster. And I'd be willing to take that risk. Garver, I think, hits enough that he could, you know. But I would add Garver. I wouldn't add Turner. But with the number of spots that the Twins could potentially have, it might not hurt to add him. I wouldn't jump to that conclusion yet for me.
Hey, tell me about Jalen Davis. That's a name that you mentioned an awful lot. Maybe not as much. He's gotten promoted to Cedar Rapids and isn't exactly cruising, but he's having a pretty nice run there. What's it about your guy from Appalachian State that makes you excited about his future,
yeah,
at least about what he's doing right now?
So the thing with Jalen is he was hurt at Appalachian State. He actually played against North Carolina State, hit a couple balls off on Carlos Rodon as a college kid, and then hurt his shoulder making a diving catch. Basically, right after the draft happens, I would go through, more so in the past you know, few years and less recently because I can get a pretty good sense from guys I talk to who's going to sign and not going to sign. But Davis was a name that I looked at and thought, a lot of potential there, coming off injury, probably isn't going to sign as a 23rd, 24th rounder. Has a lot of pop in his bat, athletic, could throw a little bit, arm's not great. But he could play left field, and but he has some swing and miss in his game.
Poor man's Adam Brett Walker. Or can he? Well, he can throw, so that's different, I guess.
Yeah, he throws better than Walker, but yeah, they're going to produce similarly. Walker's a little more bigger. Davis is kind of small.
6'1", 190. I was a little surprised to see that.
He's not a big dude, but. You know, when he was at E-Town, he had a ton of home runs in a limited amount of time. You probably have the stats in front of you.
12 and 41 games. That's something. But also 59 strikeouts. Yeah.
So he struck out a lot, and then he got promoted to Cedar Rapids maybe a week before I went down there. And he showed
it's a nice
off
gift for you.
Yeah, his second at bat, I think, of the weekend that I saw, he hit out to dead center. I mean. I was going to refill my beverage, and I turn, and all of a sudden you hear, it was just a different sound, and you see the center fielder run to the wall and watch the ball go over it. So, you know, he's got that type of ability. I think if he can figure out the strikeout thing, which, you know, everybody has that problem, he's a top 25 type prospect for the Twins. He's kind of cooled off a little bit. They moved him down in the order. But he's athletic enough that he could play in a corner. The thing is, there's not a lot of pressure on these guys, at least for my opinion, because there's all these other players in front of them. You know, nobody has to be the next Max Kepler.
Sure.
You know, Kepler, it's like, sees the opportunity. Buxton sees the opportunity. Rosario, you know. With Lamont Wade and with these guys down there, there's not a lot of opportunities. Maybe there's more pressure. You know, I don't know how they're working in their head, but, you know, Jalen Davis is a guy that could play at Cedar Rapids the rest of the year, start at Fort Myers next year, probably hit a little bit more in the Florida State League just because I think the weather's conducive to that. And then 3-4 years down the line, maybe you got a guy. So he's just someone that, you know, I've enjoyed following because I didn't think that the Twins would get him signed. He broke a bat and down at Cedar Rapids, you break a bat, you sign the bat, ends up in the pro shop. So sure. I have a signed broken Jalen Davis bat in my in my basement, you know, collecting dust with all the other things. But he's a guy that I think has some potential that the Twins took a risk on, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, that's a dime a dozen in the minor league systems around baseball.
I don't know if this is late breaking news, but it looks like Mitch Garver's headed to Rochester. Is that surprising to you
Perfect.
At all?
No, it makes me interested to see what else they're going to do because they got Paulino and Murphy. I've been doing some schoolwork all morning, so I haven't been on the.
Well,
on
they
the
cut
Twitter.
They cut Mastro.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I wonder what Garver. I mean, he's been splitting time between center and first, or catcher and first. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Bianco is obviously going to play first.
Right.
So I'll be interested to see, but I think that validates. That the Twins have now determined that Garver is a better prospect than Turner too.
Yeah, so. I think you scouting the stat sheet obviously is not perfect, but I think based on even just, you know, the fact that Garver's thrown some runners out, there's something,
a lot of runners out.
There's something in his defense that he's at least making leaps and bounds, and I've heard he's a pretty hard worker in that respect. So yeah, I think it's pretty good, pretty clear he's edged him out there. We were talking about Cedar Rapids. Promoted this morning to Cedar Rapids is Mr. Blankenhorn. What can you tell me about him?
He's a good athlete, hits the ball a little bit. He's drafted, I think, as a third baseman, or drafted maybe as a shortstop. They said to move to third. But by instructs, he was playing second, which is interesting to me, and I tweeted this last night when Jeff Johnson had put those moves out, that Blankenhorn, unless they're going to play him in left field, which, I mean, I guess they could.
Sure.
Their best player is playing second base. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So how do you make room for, I mean, this isn't shortstop where you move a guy to third or second, or you have your best hitter, and now the Blankenhorn is the best prospect that they have on that roster. They're both second basemen. So I don't know if we'll see Arias playing some, you know, hitting some DH. He's not a great second baseman. I don't know that he'll even stick at second base, which, I mean, if a guy can hit, you find a spot for him. But,
right, for sure.
You know, Blankenhorn's just a young guy that, you know, I think was promoted. Seems like he was promoted kind of slowly. Him and Cabbage both, when they're getting a lot of their, you know, that short season. Last year being drafted, he can hit a little bit and he can run. He's a good athlete. He's got to put it all together and hopefully we'll see some of that in Cedar Rapids. I know, talking to some people down in Cedar Rapids, they weren't necessarily hoping for these late season promotions from guys like Blankenhorn and Kirilov because they're afraid that if they do really well in these next, you know, month and a half, that this might be their only time at Cedar Rapids. So, Blankenhorn, I think if he hits a little bit and can find a defensive home, whether that's second or if they're going to try him back at third or maybe left field, you know, he's a top 15 prospect in this organization.
What's the latest you've heard about Lewis Thorpe? Somebody was asking me about him on Twitter last night.
Don't quote me on that, but I feel like he's started to throw recently.
Okay.
I feel like that's something that I heard or read. I would assume at this point, I don't know that there's any point in trying to get him back game ready.
Yeah, ramping him up for the last month probably doesn't make
that
any sense.
That seems silly. My approach with him would be, because I know there was a setback. I think he had like mono.
Yeah, I think I saw that too. That's right.
So at this point, I would probably say, let's get him to instructs. We'll do what we need to do there, and then let's just make sure he's healthy coming into the spring.
Where do you send him to in the spring if he's healthy?
He would stay at Fort Myers. I think that's the with guys that are injured and having what they have available there compared to what they have in Cedar Rapids. You know, there's just more people there that can keep an eye on him. I would start him at Fort Myers. I think, you know, based on how he pitched at Cedar Rapids, he was there. That's a fair thing to do. I don't know that I probably wouldn't get him all ramped up and ready to go to start the year. I'd probably back him off a little bit, see how he responds in
control his innings
training.
Too, maybe.
Yeah, and then that way he can pitch through, you know. I don't want a guy that hasn't pitched in, you know, almost 2 years then to run out of innings with, you know, 4 months in the season and have to get shut down and then get shut down again. So
yeah, that is kind of screwy.
I would probably keep him in Fort Myers and have him, you know, have it a very controlled thing. He's an arm that, you know, he's a top eight, top nine prospect before he mm-hmm. went down. So I would be very careful with him. He's left-handed. He's going to be good. He's just got to get back to where he can throw and be confident in his arm. So I wouldn't get him started until next spring, but you know, who knows what's going on down there? If he's getting ramped up now, he could be ready. He's just a guy for me that I'm okay with just saying, hey, let's get you an instruct, let's see what you have, and then come back in the spring and let's do it.
Let's jump to Double A. Tyler J battling a little bit of it. Sounds like a neck issue, but not as serious as potential shoulder issue or arm issue. What did you see from him this year? What are you expecting as far as a recovery? And do you think that a timeline that is realistic might see him in the big leagues at some point next year?
I think it's possible. If they continue to believe that he's a starter, and I have no reason to believe that, you know, the Twins have given that up, I don't know that we'll see it. I think they gotta build up his innings and with this shutdown, you know, they moved him to the bullpen to kind of control his innings, and that's when this kind of flared up, which mm-hmm. is interesting. The one timeline I saw is that he could be able to pitch again in the next couple weeks. I feel like that's an ambitious, you know, thing to do with a guy that, you know, the neck, I think, didn't he have a deal that started with the neck and then kind of move around a little bit?
Was that the injury that ultimately ended up with the threatening of the issue with service time? The grievance? Or is that something different?
I feel like the neck was more recent.
Oh, okay, maybe. I know that.
It all that stuff connects.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And with the guy that I was already being cautious with, as far as how much I was using him, I don't know that I would really rush to get him back this year. I would like to see him. I would like to see him throw a little bit before the season's over.
Is he a fall league kind of guy?
I don't think so. I don't think so because they shut him down with the innings already.
Sure.
If they maybe without the injury and kind of extend him a little bit and do that, that's a possibility. I don't know that they would want to do that. He pitched in cold weather last year from the beginning of his season until he was drafted, and then they moved him down to Florida and he threw a little bit there. That's a long season. I would like to give him some time off if the neck's bothering him. If it's just the neck, that's great. And I would start him next year in Rochester, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of arguing, discussion between Gonsalves or Stewart, who's the better prospect. I think Jay's got the highest ceiling of the three of them. Well, you know what? I think Stewart's got the highest ceiling. I think Jay's is most likely to reach his ceiling, which is a number two, number three starter. But I think I would start him at Rochester, and if needed, he could be a left-handed guy out of the bullpen. But they got to get to a point where they can say, we got to just take off the restrictions and let you go. And I don't know if that's going to happen next year, which could prohibit him from getting into that rotation. But I think, if they needed a bullpen guy, he could certainly do it and do it well. I just think there's so many other options that they have at this point.
Yeah, it seems unlikely they'd need another bullpen arm.
Right. And to add him to be a bullpen arm, add him to the 40-man, I wouldn't do it. So I would say probably not next year, but I think he should absolutely be competing for a spot in the rotation out of spring training in 2018.
What's going on with Cole Stewart, too? You look at his AA numbers, ERA is decent, but no strikeouts, lots of walks, makes for an ugly whip. And what are you seeing from him?
And nobody hits him hard. That's still what people tell me.
Yeah, let's see here. I'm gonna bring up his splits and see what it says. His opposing batting line, because he's made more than a handful of starts down there.
Yeah, but he doesn't miss bats, but the bats don't square up the ball. So, I mean, I haven't asked for a while, but I would ask some people around the organization, like as far as who's the better prospect, Stewart or Gonsalves. And last year, even when Stewart was struggling, it was Stewart. And I think Gonsalves is going to end up being a guy that, probably number three or four, probably a number four, that's going to throw a lot of innings, that's going to strike out 7.5 to 9, and he'll take the ball every 5 days, and he'll, be a 10-game winner. That's who Gonsalves is going to be. Cole Stewart, I think there's still enough belief that things are just going to click.
Mm-hmm. Maybe second time around in Chattanooga.
Yeah, that things are just going to click, and he's going to start missing bats. I mean, if guys aren't squaring him up, he's not missing by much. You know what I mean?
Here's where he's at for a triple slash against. He's made 12 appearances in Chattanooga. 277 for an average, which not great. 356 for an on-base, pretty scary. But a 373 slugging, so a lower than 100 isolated power. That jives with the 52% ground ball rate, 4 home runs against, 13 doubles, so maybe a double every start. So yeah, as far as guys putting the ball in play, it's happening, and it's going to happen when you get a 36-29 strikeouts to walk ratio. But yeah, he's not getting killed for all the balls in play. That, to me, does mean that there's something else there as far as potential. And, there is going to have to be a situation where you start striking out 6 or 7 guys per start,
right,
to really make that next jump. But maybe that's the next go-around in Chattanooga next spring.
Yeah. I think he's still the guy in the organization that has the best chance, that has the chance to be like a number one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the likelihood is of him doing that, but I think he's got everything that just needs to come together, and there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. So I'm not ready to give up on him. He would still be a top 10 prospect for me.
Yeah.
At the end of the season. And I don't know that we'll see him there all over, but with Jay and Stewart and Gonsalves, I mean, you got those are all top 10 prospects, and I think that gives you a fighting shot to get a couple of those guys to develop to what they're supposed to be.
Well, and the trouble is you can't really compare his trajectory to any former Twin because as the Lavelle article a while back said, they really haven't developed a pitcher from high school to the big leagues since like Brad Radke. You know, you had Matt Garza who was college, Kevin Slowey, Scott Baker, Kyle Gibson. Kyle Loesch was a trade, so he came over from the Cubs. So you're not really looking at a high school pitcher trajectory. You know, you might look at what Matt Garza did at Double A, and he probably had 8 or 9 strikeouts per 9, so he didn't ever probably struggle at New Britain, you know, like Cole is here at Chattanooga.
Well, and not even that, but a high school guy that really didn't have much of a track record as a pitcher.
With all the football, yeah.
Played a lot of football, didn't do the perfect game stuff. I mean, he was just someone that they watched. I think he threw 50 innings his senior year of high school.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot.
And didn't play, I think he might have played like in the Under Armour game. He didn't do the circuit like all through high school like most kids do nowadays.
Sure.
So there was just a lot of raw ability. And I think the Twins have, they started with backing him off certain pitches. I don't know that he was throwing with a slider that they just kind of took away.
For a while there, They had him just going, I think, sinker and changeup.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's going to take longer with guys like that. And the fact that he can go to Double-A, which it's a big jump, and not put up great numbers but not just totally get destroyed, suggests that there's still something there. And like you said, he's got to start striking out 6 or 7 guys every 9 innings. But I think the potential is to do that. If that means he goes back to Chattanooga and next year and starts to figure it out a little bit, I think there's a lot of potential there for him to still be the top of the rotation type pitcher.
What was the deal with Gonzalez's last start? I saw you had a bit of a ruckus on Twitter about he got skipped and the girlfriend was in town to see it.
Oh yeah,
she was not pleased.
Oh yeah,
his girlfriend is an Iowa girl. She
Yeesh.
Works.
I'm just kidding.
No, here's the deal. So she worked at the bar that Jim Cricket, Steve Brewer.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I actually met her in Cedar Rapids 2 years ago, and so I took my picture with her, and she's a cute girl.
Sure.
And I was just she was our waitress and just BS'd with her for a while because. I always joke with Seth that when he went down to Cedar Rapids, he needed to find himself a girl, you know? So I just happened to be like, hey, so a buddy of mine comes down here and he doesn't find himself a girl, so can we just get our picture taken so I can send it to him? So that's how that all started. But then Gonsalves came up the next year, you know, they obviously met. I ran into Gonsalves at Twins Fest. And he's like, hey, I saw a picture of you and my girlfriend on Instagram or whatever. You know, it was cool because they hadn't met yet. So,
So it was retroactive.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, no, dude, that was way before you were here. She wouldn't have taken that picture if she was dating this. She wouldn't, you know. So anyway, she's actually moved out to California, and she was going, because that's where he's from. She was going to go watch him this weekend. And she had all sorts of airplane issues. She was in, like, Dallas, and her flight was late, so she missed the flight and ended up in, I think, somewhere in Florida. And then by the time she finally got to Tennessee, there was a doubleheader. There was something messed up, and they skipped the start of his.
Wow.
So she wasn't even going to be able to get to see him pitch, which bothered her, but... Yeah, you know, they'll be all right. And I think his parents are flying in to see him pitch. And you know, he's a really quiet guy.
Yeah, I met him when the Twins drafted him. They had him and Cole Stewart in town at the same time in 2013.
And those two guys are completely. I mean, I think they're completely different.
Yes, definitely.
And I don't know Cole Stewart personally, but no, I would say they're completely different. And it's funny because Gonsalves is the guy that came in. After being drafted, he was a potential first-round pick, dealt with a suspension in
kind of
high school.
Prisoner of circumstance.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting story because the principal, I believe, of his high school was his uncle.
Oh, jeez, that makes it even crazier. Because it, wasn't it somebody had smoked like some weed in a hotel room and he'd been around, and so he got in trouble by being near it?
Yeah, well, he wasn't real honest about what had happened. He wasn't going to throw anybody on the bus. And I asked him about it, and he said basically it was a little thing that became a huge deal.
We've been there before.
It only matters in the minors.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he talked pretty openly about it, and it was like, you know, if there had been a story there, I'd have written a story about it, but it was like, not much of a story. And he was real cool about things and just is real laid back. You know, he's a California kid. He's a surfer. So, I wanted to make sure, and she said, no, he's great physically. Everything's good. So he's been pitching really well. And I thought he might kind of hit the wall a little bit in Double A, but he hasn't yet. He did have a not great start, I want to say two starts ago, but rebounded well in his last start. And I think, I would move him up to Rochester next year too.
Sure.
I kind of think with the amount of starters that the Twins have, returning, that you're gonna see that backup where your best prospects might continue to stay in Chattanooga a little bit, because you're still gonna have Dean and Darnell and Wheeler, and you're gonna have all those guys lined up, and not a lot of openings in your rotation at Triple A. So he's definitely a guy that I could see. He could make his major league debut next July, I think would be a fair prediction. If needed, he could make that jump.
So one thing I want to ask you before we let you go and go pick up your kiddos and all that fun stuff, with Byron Buxton being sent back to Triple A, you know, he's obviously dominated that level, but I think if you send him down there with some mechanical tweaks and say, hey, we know you can hit 350 at this level, but maybe do things a little bit different process-wise to challenge yourself, I think that could be a good deal for him. You know, I know when Liam Hendricks went back, I think it was the second or third time, he really struggled, and I don't know if it was because he was trying some different things or what exactly. But how are you going to, if you're in charge, I'm not saying you will be, but who knows, you're pretty lovable. Let's just kind of...
I am.
Exactly. And so walk us through how you would handle Buxton if you were in that chair, you know, with his future at stake.
I would give him very, very simple things to think about. I think the one thing that we've noticed, if we've watched enough of him, and you've had the opportunity with your minor league subscription,
sure,
to watch him a little bit at Cedar Rapids, to watch him a little bit at Fort Myers, to watch him a little bit. Now, I'm not a lot at Chattanooga because the games weren't televised, and when he's been at Rochester, to watch him there. The one thing I would tell him, like, hey, if you see the dot, you know Torrey talked about that dot? He tells that story all the time about seeing the dot.
Right.
If you see the dot, don't swing.
And that's like, the breaking ball, right?
Yeah, it's a slider. Like, if it's a slider, just don't swing. And just watch the pitch, watch where you see the dot, when you see the dot, and then watch where it hits the catcher's mitt. And if you can determine if that ball's not going to be hittable, which even if you swing at it, you're not hitting it.
Right.
You know, you got to learn how to pick up that pitch. As far as the other stuff goes, I would give him real simple things. And I think, like I started to say before, if you've watched a lot of him, things that require a lot of processing don't seem to end well.
Right.
The things that are real reactionary, outfield, he's phenomenal. He doesn't have time to think about it.
So he's got good baseball instincts, you'd say?
He's got good reactionary instincts. Okay. I don't know that his baseball smarts are real great. You know what I mean?
And then can those evolve for a guy?
Well, I think it's going to take a lot of time for it to happen.
Sure.
And I wouldn't want to change. You know, Parker always is tweeting their, you know, different stuff with the swing. There are very, very smart people. Chad Allen's one of them. I think Bernanski's one of them. There are very, very smart people that can look at video and say, here's what we see, here's what we need to see.
Mm-hmm.
But why is this not happening? Is that on the coach? You know, and that's the stuff that kind of irritates me. Is this on Paul Molitor? Is this on Tom Bernanski? These are Major League Baseball players. These are very, very intelligent people
mm-hmm.
that have had a lot of success at the highest level of baseball. And now we're gonna blame the player development staff who developed the number one. I mean, he was the number one prospect in baseball, like, for three straight years.
With a bullet.
And so now why is this becoming a, well, if it's maybe it's player development, they didn't get him ready. He wouldn't have dominated all of the levels.
Right.
If he wasn't ready. Why is this Paul Molitor and Tom Rance, did they change something? Are they all of a sudden saying, hey, I know that this worked? I'm not convinced that that's the truth either. I think there's something, somebody or something or some way that got to get in the guy's head and just be able to have him slow Major League Baseball down. And I think it's possible. I just think it might take a really long time. I was perfectly content with him getting sent down.
Mm-hmm.
For the fact that he wasn't getting it done, and letting a guy bat 190 in the big leagues isn't going to help anything. You know, restore some confidence. If he goes and hits 350 at AAA, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But his option last year didn't count. He's still a young guy. This is 16, his first option year. 17 could be, I will take as much time as it possibly takes. There's going to be a new man in charge, you know, sometime this fall or winter, and it's going to be a baseball mind. It's got to be a baseball mind.
Absolutely.
That I'm not ready to call him a bust. You know, it would have been great to see him come up and hit 290, steal 35 bases, hit 15 home runs, make spectacular catches everywhere on the field.
Look like a young Carlos Beltran.
But it didn't happen. But eventually, it's going to click, and maybe he's only a 240 hitter. But 240 with that speed and that defense, it's fine. And if it takes 3 years for that to unlock that, I'm okay. But it would be very simple tasks. Like, here's what you need to think about. The bunting thing is crazy. He sucks at bunting. I mean, that's obvious.
He's flat out sucks at it.
Do I want him to be a really good bunter? It'd be great if he could just have that tool along with everything else.
Sure.
You know? But I'm not going to lose my mind and try to turn him into a guy that only bunts. That's silly. Bunting's dumb anyway. Don't bunt.
I think what hurts him is, as we get ready to let you go here, Miguel Sano's relative success basically jumping into the big leagues. You know, it's like that tag team mentality where both these guys should take on the league at the same speed and at the same level, since they were both great prospects. Buxton was a better prospect in terms of numbers and basically more due to position and tools. But, you know, that's one of those deals where it just didn't pan out that way. So what I'm doing if I'm in charge is go out and sign Carlos Gomez to a one-year deal, let him rebuild his value and bring Buxton along slowly. And maybe you can reap the benefits of a bounce-back season from Carlos Gomez. But that's all I got for you, Jeremy. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciated it. Have a great rest of the day, and thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. And that's all we got. That was Jeremy Nygaard of Twins Daily. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.